Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Whole Truth Podcast with me, Jordan Stevens, aka Jay Steezy, which is an alter ego of mine that I just remembered.
Wow.
Jay Steezy, yeah. I'm not sure what you did.
I need one.
Yeah, I think you do need an alter ego. Anyway, before we introduce your alter ego, I'm joined by Matt Haig, author and I'd say activist. And then you would like to activate aspects of humanity that are more beneficial for others.
Yeah, it's a weird term, isn't it? Like, I sometimes get mental health ambassador as well, which I don't really know what it means. But I think it just means I go online a lot and talk about my crises.
Yeah. What is the ambassador as a thing?
I don't know.
I talk about mental health.
I think it's something to do with Ferrero Rocher.
Yeah.
I don't see myself as an ambassador or really an activist, but I suppose I do get angry about mental health issues, certain issues and things, and I like sort of raising awareness, so I suppose. Yeah.
Protest.
Low level. Yeah.
A low level activist.
You know, computer.
I love that. Matt Haig, author and low level activist.
Between 3:30 and 4 PM, I will do a little bit of your activism.
Yeah, I love that. No, but it is good. And I can't lie, man. You have taken me out of moments. You need to feel a bit off-centre, off-kilter. Just in a moment, you know, and then you read something and it's like, ah, yes. So thank you.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, I listened to the podcast you did with Fern.
Yeah.
And that was incredibly insightful.
I suppose what I try and do is because, like, because I'm quite old now. I'm 43 years old.
And when I'm old.
No, it's the first time you properly have a crisis. You're way off that, aren't you? What are you, like?
26.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm knackered, mate.
But I was 24 when I heard first had my crisis. This is like in the dark ages. This is 1999.
Jesus.
I know, but just about had
Matrix cars. Had just come out.
Yeah.
Good film.
Matrix, yeah. Matrix, what else? Oh, I don't know, because I was having my breakdown. That was a long time ago. And there wasn't much about, people weren't really talking about mental health. There wasn't social media, obviously. There were some books, but the books that were there were very dense, academic, scary things which wouldn't necessarily take you out of a bad place, more like put you in it. So I suppose when I started writing Reasons to Stay Alive and started sort of talking about mental health, I was trying to just remember me at 24.
Yeah, no,
and just sort
sure.
of do it in a total conversational, you know, I was having a total meltdown in Ibiza and I was suicidal. And I constantly think of me during those sort of weeks and what would have actually
helped you out.
What words would have, you know, if there were any words that I could sort of put a message in a bottle back through time.
And to the same extent, Notes on Another's Planet is a more almost an updated version.
Yeah, it is.
Talk to yourself on a more everyday level.
Yes, and it's a little bit less about me and more about what I think of, you know, 21st century society, and also placing mental health in the same context that we put physical health. Like, what I mean by that is we know that physical health has a context. Whatever our sort of genetic disposition to something, lifestyle factors affect it, whether it's sleep, exercise, diet, whatever. Where we don't do that so much with mental health, and we don't understand things necessarily like social media or breaking news as a mental health issue.
One thing I find most most urgent about mental health and physical health is that the length of time that neglected physical health can have long-lasting damage on you, I think is spread out a lot further. Mm. I feel as though, like, if you break your leg, there's a set time. Whereas with mental health, I think there is some very healing moments, but the reason why it's so important to implement that and write books like what you're writing is because if you catch that early, you have toolkit for the rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Because mental health is kind of everything. Yeah, our minds are kind of... Like, if you've got a bad back, you can normally or sometimes get yourself into a position where it'll be a bit less bad, or you walk around a bit, or
you manage it.
You manage it, and it's not essentially you. A bad back will be something you have. It won't be something you are. Whereas with mental health, it's our mind, it's our thoughts, it's 100% all consuming. I think that's why depression is the one illness people willingly take their own lives because it's just literally
everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's about having that toolkit.
Totally having that toolkit. And I was someone who definitely did not have that toolkit.
I really don't think anyone... Well, I think you have to embark consciously on quite a journey to...
Yes, and that's why, I mean, when someone first falls ill, especially if you fall ill the way I did, because I was like that typical young man thing of not really being that in tune with my feelings and not acknowledging, certainly not acknowledging to other people what I was feeling like. But I think I had sort of low-level depression, low-level anxiety, a few issues that I needed addressing, and I wasn't addressing them. So I'd gone off to Ibiza to party, drinking loads, taking some drugs, and not sleeping well and not living well. And we'd had 3 summers of this, and it was the last summer. And actually, I was in a relatively healthy patch. I'd been for a run that morning, no drugs, no alcohol, no cigarettes. And it was like 11 o'clock in the morning or something. And I just, a panic attack from nowhere. And you think of like a panic attack as like a 10-minute thing. You sort of breathe through a walk out. This just didn't end. I was just in this sort of total... terror.
What, and it didn't pass out or anything?
Didn't pass. There was no level. I just thought, my body is just going to combust. Because my heart was like... It wasn't even that my heart was beating fast. It was beating hard. Hard and fast. So it was like pounding. And a total brain sensations. I thought I was going to die in the next sort of minute. And then when I wasn't dying in the next minute, I thought, right, well, I'm definitely going mad. Because that was my only view of mental health, was that you're either totally well or you're mad. And there's no... you even cooped, or
was
you
totally
end up.
Well.
Yeah, no, there's no totally well anyway. But I mean, like, because like with physical health, we understand that we're not in 100% full health. But with mental health,
yeah,
we kind of have to blag it and pretend that we are, or we blag it to ourselves and think, yeah, there's not a problem. But we're always on a scale somewhere. But because I've been ignoring that slow dip, I've instantly crashed.
Do you know where that would have come from? Aside of the immediate partying and stuff, is there anything...
What, where my...
Grief or...
No, there was no one thing. And I think the problem for me and the reason I became suicidal was because I didn't know what had got me into it. I didn't know how to get out of it. I think there was many, many things. I think there's, you know, childhood things. I mean, I was, like, yeah, relatively... inverted commas normal background, you know, parents moved about a bit, but you know, parents,
see, you already skipped over something quite big there. Parents moved about a bit, that's well, like quite a
yes. Well,
it's one of these, but this is what I mean about having awareness of that when we're younger.
Yeah,
being uprooted as a child.
I know.
I did it a few times.
I'm always sort of wary of the parent stuff because, like, my parents aren't perfect, and my mum herself. When I was, I didn't really know this until I was ill. But my mum had postnatal depression with me. So, but what she did after I recovered, which was quite an intense moment, is she gave me access to. She used to keep these 5-year diaries where she'd jot everything down. In a way, people don't really so much now in the sort of digital age. But so I went through and I could see the same day over different years. So 1975, 1976, 1977. Whoa. And seeing and like the different trips to the doctors and how she was feeling
what
that day.
Do you mean?
And having to sort of like call my dad from work because she was struggling. And she totally loved me, but she just didn't feel like she was responsible enough, and like that she wasn't able to cope, and that, you know, something bad would happen to me because she couldn't cope. So I obviously can't remember any of that stuff. That's just sort of like, she was out of it by the time I was sort of 5, 6, 7. I was like, went to this tiny, tiny, tiny little village school, which was like this little heavenly little family, basically, of 28 people.
Right.
The whole school, infant through juniors, was 28 people. So you had two classes, infants and juniors. And then I went to quite a big, not that great, state comprehensive school, and I was automatically a misfit because I was a village kid who had this, and then we're sort of in town. I did eventually make good friends and stuff. Difference is now, if you're having a crap time at school now, it doesn't stop because you've then got social media and everything 24/7. Whereas in back in the 80s, 90s, you'd have your crap day at school, you'd go back and watch your Australian soap operas and eat your crisps, and you'd sort of like at least have that space away.
How are you today?
I struggle with this time of year. I want to be one of these people who says, I love winter. You know, it's almost
SAD.
Cool to
me. SAD?
Yeah, I've got a bit of SAD.
Mate, I've got it majorly. It's the daylight.
Yeah, it's light more than heat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely. And I really struggle with it. I want to find an escape from January through to April. I can just about cope. LA. Well, I've been thinking of California, but America at the moment, I don't know.
It's
the apocalypse. But yeah, Southern California. But then you've got earthquakes, haven't you? Up here. I was thinking Australia, but then you got spiders. Actually, I'm all right with Australia now because I did some research. My anxiety, it causes me to do a lot of Google searching.
Yeah.
And the deadliest. What's the deadliest animal in Australia?
Black widow spider.
It's a horse.
It's a horse?
Yes. You see, people are so scared of the spiders that don't actually kill you anymore because they have this sort of anti-venom and stuff. And you've got snakes and you've got sharks, and they don't actually kill that many people. But a horse, horses kill people.
I mean, when I say kill people, do you mean like they fell off?
They're riding.
Whilst horses. Yeah. You've got to specify that. You know what I mean?
Don't creep into your room.
Mate.
Well, I don't know.
You wake up in the middle of the night and just going.
My mental health is so dependent on light. Every house I've ever lived in, I
yeah, you need the big windows.
I paint it white, have the big windows. We've got big sort of glass as much as possible. I even put a hole in the wall just to keep it open, keep it light.
Can we devise some plans on what to do when the day is grey and short? Other than go to La La Land?
Well, no, I think getting outside. I don't think people get outside enough, do they?
What if it's really cold, though?
Yeah, well, we have a dog. Because then you have to. Yeah.
I just got a dog.
And then you've got a
reason
to
get out. He might save me from the SAD.
He'll get you outside. And also, there's scientific evidence that dogs do actually calm you down.
Oh, mate, they extend your life by 10 years, apparently.
Do they? I can believe it. But dogs are good therapy, generally.
Right, okay. But I am intrigued. Like I said, getting outside, I hear that. What are you like with Christmas?
I'm okay. The problem with Christmas is it knocks a routine. So if you've been, like, I have to be careful with alcohol and Christmas, obviously. I can go teetotal for a long patches of a year, but Christmas, it's so hard. And food and everything. So I'm often, like, my wife's always sort of managing it, so I'm not in too much of a bad state on Christmas Day. Because I really spoil everyone's fun. We've got kids. And it's like, you know, I'm like basically the Scrooge of our house because I'm not because I like Scrooge, but because I'm always in a sort of like non-talkative, like little Eeyore, sort of like grumping in the corner.
Eeyore?
You know, from Winnie the Pooh.
What has been your best period of mental well-being? We've heard a little bit about what was your worst.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, you see, I don't generally get through about 2 years without having some kind of blip. So I can have a year where I've been like depressed or having anxiety twice, but it'd still be a good year. In a weird way, this is the thing that people who haven't experienced mental illness don't necessarily understand, is that you can have depression intermittently, you can have anxiety intermittently, and actually know immense happiness between them as you're recovering from them, sometimes even while you've slightly got them. And like, I've known more happiness in my life since, you know, this side of 24, this side of breakdown and being ill, than I ever did before. And I, you know, because in the olden days I used to have the most sort of intense experiences to be happy, the loudest music, you know, spiciest food, everything had to be just full max to 11.
I hear you. Love that.
But actually, once you've been through something that intense, and I literally, when I had my breakdown, I physically couldn't drink for ages. I couldn't do any of the stuff that I used to think was like the good stuff. And I had to learn that life itself.
Were you bored?
The good stuff. I wasn't bored because I was. Anxiety doesn't make you bored.
Bored, yeah. You were trying to regulate it.
Trying to regulate it. So, you know, going wild for me would be like eating a banana because I had this weird idea that bananas were bad for me. And because what your brain does, I know this sounds silly, but your brain makes an association. So if you have a panic attack on a day, you've done something, whether it's eating a banana.
Entirely. Yeah.
You think, oh, I'm scared of bananas. I shouldn't do that. And you get into this avoidance thing of what you can do. Oh, supermarkets trigger panic attacks. I can't go into a supermarket. This and that. And so a lot of my life and energy was spent just trying my best to ignore things I was scared of and doing it anyway. So I didn't. I didn't have a proper 20s really. So from 24 through to 30, I was the sort of nightmare boyfriend. Not in a sense that I was horrible to Andrea, but just I couldn't do stuff.
Wow! And you guys have been with each other the whole time?
We've been together since 19.
What?
You know, in an ideal world, we'd have sort of met later on in life, but life is what it is. And it's nice actually to have someone that you sort of grow up with, and especially if you go through some mental stuff and you can actually be your weird self. Yeah.
Well, it makes sense now, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? That is literally an investment.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it pays off. You know, you've put your time in. But yeah, it wasn't fun for her for a few years because I'd gone from one extreme to the other. I was the person who never wanted to come home. I was like, oh, come on, it's only 3 o'clock. Let's just stay out. And then I was literally like, what, you're seriously considering going out for a drink? No, that's just impossible. So I'd gone from like,
Have you guys lived with each other as well?
Since students, yeah.
Wow, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah, we did the B for years together. And so, yeah, we've been through all kinds of stuff.
Overcoming noise of the world.
Yeah, it's hard. There's a lot of noise.
There is, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, my big theory and what I write about in Notes on the Nervous Planet is that we're overloaded. You know, we never have to be bored again, ever. We can always listen to our favourite song, watch our favourite movie at any point in time, or communicate with anyone we want to communicate with in the world. And so we've got a new problem now. Our problem isn't a lack of choice. It's like we're sort of paralysed by information, and we're paralysed by news. And, you know, people used to get news twice a day at most. You used to get your morning paper and your 6 o'clock news. And now we can have it every sort of 10 minutes on Twitter. We can sort of like look at Trump, what Trump's tweeting or what people are saying in Texas. Or
just in a suspended state of... Freak out.
And in the 70s, they still managed to get rid of Nixon, just getting their news twice a day. And it seems like nothing changes. There's continual news, but we're sort of all paralyzed by it. And it's not just news, it's everything. And like Netflix, I love Netflix. We're in a golden age of TV, obviously, but you can just sort of sit staring at Netflix, not knowing what to watch, and sort of flicking, and then you're thinking, oh, okay, this is good, but there might be something better, and maybe I'm watching the wrong
series. I've spoken about that before. I feel like I miss the patience of it all. Patience is something I struggled with anyway.
Yeah, we're losing our attention spans.
Yeah, so I've always had a short attention span. I don't know whether one believes in the label of ADHD or whatever, but I definitely do process things differently. But I now miss the wait because, you know, like if you went to Blockbusters or Video Box, that film needs to be good. You know what I mean? Like you're spending £3.95.
Yeah, and you'll watch it, even when it's got the mediocre parts or whatever. You'll watch it, and sometimes it'll be worth being patient.
If it's bad, you're furious. Like, you know what I mean? And you're like, I will write a letter to the studio and be like, this is... So there's a passion to it. And if it's good, you're like, wow, and then you watch it again. But
also, these things, and I don't want to sound like an old granddad, but it's changing how we live and it's changing how we sleep. Even Netflix is changing how we sleep. I don't know if you know this, but the boss of Netflix is a guy called Reed Hastings, American guy, obviously. He recently said a few months ago that Netflix's main competitor isn't Amazon, it's not a streaming service, it's not a TV channel. Netflix's main competitor is sleep, because if it can get us to sleep less... We'll be watching.
He said that.
He said that.
I can't handle that. That's terrifying.
I know. It's terrifying. But we are sleeping less than we were 50 years ago by about an hour or something a night. And the quality of sleep we're getting is worse because of our minds racing and blue
TV,
light. And
yeah, screen in the room is a good... I have to be proud of myself. I've always...
You don't have TV in your bedroom.
Yeah. Since I moved into my own place, I made a rule because your body...
Do you know what the next level is?
What?
No phone in the room.
I do that too.
Oh, do you?
And actually,
amazing.
And
you're
actually,
Jedi.
Since I've been slack with no phone in the room, mm-hmm. it is shocking what I do when I wake up. Like literally, I have woken up over 3 times in the last week, and I have watched videos of magicians.
What? You get out of bed and get your...
I wake up at a good time. Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to walk the dog. Mm-hmm. It's a vibe. And then half an hour goes because I have to watch these magicians.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And I think that's mad because I have to explain to you, there's no reason for me watching this video.
Like, no, but you enjoy watching it.
I enjoy watching it, but I also would enjoy my day if I started it earlier.
So are these like teaching practical things like how to do magic tricks?
It's like on that Penn and Teller show, Fool Us. And okay. You never know whether or not they're going to fool them. And it was the same thing. It was the same thing. I had a weird spell as well where I couldn't stop watching online poker.
Right. It was weird. So you weren't participating, you were watching.
I was watching people play. Anyway, the point is, you're right. What I'm trying to say is I feel as though the telly and the phone, it exposes the reality we live in, which is that I feel like we're at a place now in 2018 when everything works on a base level. Most things work. I don't often go out on a day and go, oh man, that's really bugging me. And it's like, it's only when something else is presented. It's like, you have all the right limbs and then someone gives you like a third arm. And then you're like, do I need that? And they're like, yeah, you do. And then the third arm starts doing loads of amazing stuff and you go like, I miss that third arm if it's gone. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I would never need to watch.
And it's like
poker.
In your life. Yeah, but it's like in a career, isn't it? Like whatever you get, that becomes the base level of what you need.
I can't do it.
And it's like, I can remember like before, because I wanted to be a writer and I couldn't do much else because I was agoraphobic. So I wanted to be a writer. And I said to myself, I'll be happy forever if I just get one book published with my name on it. I'll be happy.
Boom.
That's a dream I've had, and I've got nothing beyond that, and that's fine.
Right.
Then you get it, it lasts about a week, and then it's on your brain on the next thing. And all you've done is raise the bar of what you need.
I know, your expectation.
To feel.
But I think low expectation is the key to creative happiness, and it's so difficult.
Oh, it's, yeah. I mean, we have most of what we need, don't we? We have running water. Most of us in the developed world are lucky enough to generally know where our next meal is coming from and where things like that are happening. We've got a bed for the night, we've got shelter and all of that, but we've still got our old sort of cave person anxious brains.
Yes, mad, isn't it? And that brings me on to my next question, which is self-care. So you do tweet a lot of these little bits and bobs, little ideas or things that keep you balanced.
Yes, ironically, Twitter isn't one of those things.
It's not, is it?
No, I'm a little bit better because I don't neurotically check what people are responding to. So social media, self-care, is my one area that I'm not great at because I'm quite addicted to it. But I'm at least aware of my addiction and I'm sort of trying to use it in more mindful ways. But yeah, I mean, self-care, I have to do certain things in a day to stop myself getting ill. So I have to do some form of exercise. I have to not eat and drink certain things. If I don't drink alcohol on consecutive days, I go through massive patches of months without drinking alcohol sometimes. Getting fit, yoga. I do yoga.
Do you? It's great, yeah. Yoga.
I started it actually not for anxiety but for a bad back, but then I was realizing, oh, it's
like the key to everything. Yeah. Unless you do it once at a time, in which case it normally brings up a lot of buried anxiety.
Yeah, I couldn't do it in public in a class. I couldn't go to a yoga class.
Have a one-on-one.
No, I have YouTube.
You do it via the YouTube?
I'm just like, yeah, I just do the YouTube. And then, you know, the internet's good for those.
I had a private instructor once. Very intense.
Really?
I couldn't do that again. One-on-one is a bit much.
Because I'm a bit I'm a bit self-conscious with yoga. You would probably...
I understand. I've accidentally turned up in like intermediate classes before and quite frankly embarrassed. Well, no, actually, I'm not going to say I embarrassed myself. I could have found it embarrassing.
Yeah. Whereas I've only ever done one exercise class in my life and it wasn't a fun experience because you're just like competing with everyone else in the room.
No, you could do it. Hot pod yoga is good for that because it's everyone's self-conscious and you just get on with it.
Oh, wait, everyone's sweating.
Mate, and there's no one can be comfortable in a hot pot.
Yeah,
yoga.
I might do that.
It's really good.
Yeah, it would be good for me.
So yoga?
Yoga, absolutely. The running yoga combination has been my sort of staple way. Because if I just do running, even if I stretch after it, I tighten my body. So like exercise is good for your mind as well as your body. But if it's tightening you up, then it's bad for anxiety. So I used to sort of struggle. Like I used to sometimes do some weights and stuff at the gym, and that had actually
made
me feel...
That's good for anxiety.
It is, but if you don't watch it and properly stretch afterwards, then...
Yeah, it all contracts.
Because I keep a lot of anxiety in my chest, so if I'm sort of like...
Really?
Tightened up.
Yeah. Like the Hulk.
Exactly like the Hulk.
This year for World Mental Health Day, we're doing something called Whole Hour, which is an incentive with our leading... charity partner, which is YMCA.
Okay.
And it's just suggesting that people do put their phones down for an hour. Ironically promoted on social media, but in keeping with the world.
I know all about this irony because I'm always sort of talking about the problems of social media or talking about my book, which is about the problems of social media while I'm on social media.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, that's how we reach those people who need it.
Exactly. And the idea is we're just wanting that hour to happen and within that hour would you do something that's of benefit to the mind. So you might have already mentioned it, being running or yoga, but with your whole hour, what would you do? So it's like,
listen to music. My son is learning the piano and we sometimes do the piano together. There's a nice little learn the piano app called Piano Maestro. So that's always fun.
Can't technically
use
the app on the phone.
Oh yeah.
No,
I think you can pass that off. Okay,
no, the piano. You can pass it off. So you'd say listening to and playing music.
Don't do it on my iPad, but yeah, that's still defeats the object. Go for a walk. If I'm really feeling anxiety coming on, just literally going for a walk with no point other than it's a walk, you know, you're not walking to anywhere, and then just to sort of stare at the sea or the sky. I know this sounds really hippy dippy, but I think just looking at a clear night sky can actually have such therapeutic benefits because it just places you as this tiny, tiny, tiny small thing in space and time. Because mental illness and mental health problems literally by their nature wrap you up in yourself. And so anything that takes you out of yourself, and that's the problem I think with the phone. It's often a way of just being neurotic about yourself, about how popular you are or who's got back to you or who hasn't got back to you. And there's always someone who hasn't got back to you or someone who said something that's not right.
Totally.
I read I can't remember his name, but is an evolutionary psychologist. So basically a psychologist looking at the fact that our brains haven't changed for 30,000 years. So our brains were perfectly evolved and adapted to life 30,000 years ago. And in that time, during our whole life, we'd have known at most about 150 people. Mm. And we'd have come across 150 people that we'd have sort of known. Now, you can know, in inverted commas, like thousands of people.
And you're not supposed to.
No, we're not made for it.
You're not supposed to. That's the thing as well. Isn't it mad that, like, this is when I thought I was crazy, was I thought, like, you can go on your phone, yeah, and go on Insta stories, mm-hmm. and I can be awake on a Wednesday morning, and I can watch last night with a friend, like, two friends of mine have gone out last night with other friends, and I wasn't there.
And you're watching their fun.
I've watched their past.
Having better fun without
you. I've watched their past, and my present is now different. I can't handle that. Like, it's gone. Yeah. I'm never going to go to what happened last night. And I shouldn't know that. No. I think we've, like, lost mystery.
Absolutely. And if you're, like, if you're on the bus going to your job in HR in Croydon, and you're just, it's Tuesday, and it's March, and it's raining outside the bus window, and you're looking at a model leaning against the palm tree in Bali. You know, it's not...
To be fair, the friends is a bad example. Ultimately, I'm glad that my friends had a good night out.
Yeah, you're deeply...
No, I'm using a hypothetical situation.
Yeah, but it is true. Right. The fear of missing out is a real thing.
Yeah, FOMO is a real thing. But the stranger thing is strangers. That is really the... and arguably strangers you don't...
Strangers or celebrities you think you know, strangers you think you know. And it's that weird thing of people being very intimate and personal, yet you still don't know them. You're still a stranger.
Yeah, well, it's curated,
you know what
they're
having
for
breakfast, but...
Yeah, it's curated. Yeah.
And you're not seeing the bad bits. Generally, people are put... every post is their sort of press release of themselves, of their life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they become these little magazines of themselves, and we all do. And I think it's not just depressing for people watching that. It's depressing when you do it. Because even if you're posting something amazing and ecstatically happy... You're still just typing and posting an update, and you might not be feeling that. And then people were saying, "Oh, well done, amazing," you know, all of that stuff. And it's not actually you. If you're putting anything out there in terms of words or anything, it's one step removed between actual you. So it's a weird thing. We're in this current state where 16 to 25 year olds are the most connected generation there's ever been, and in survey after survey they're also the loneliest generation that there's ever been. And there's this sort of paradox where the more connections we have in life, the more sort of at a deep level lonely we are. So the idea that loneliness is being alone is sort of wrong for these times, because we're all kind of feeling a bit like we're lacking that connection.
Are you planning on the next book?
Definitely planning next books. I don't know what my next book about mental health will be. I definitely think there should be three, and I definitely think I should end on a sort of like happy or at least optimistic note, because Reason to Stay Alive just started very small and personal. Notes was sort of pointing out all the problems in society, and I would like the last one to sort of be a bit utopian. I might even call it utopia, and just sort of like how we could be, you know, what would be good to work it out. I don't know.
I feel like there's a big... is a big kind of like, it's like a seesaw. I feel as though the more technology that we're creating, kind of extreme everything becomes in the world of like comfort and accessibility.
Yeah.
There's also a real desire to move away. I feel there'll be like analog and digital might even become two separate camps of the world.
That's interesting, yeah.
Because I think people will want to choose an analog.
And actually, it's for younger people, because people, you know, like... older people, it's easy to sort of like say, oh, it's better in my day when we just sort of were bored and looked out of windows. But it might have been better to have been a bit bored. But actually, it's a younger generation, it's the teenagers who are most, again, just going on survey stuff, who show that the most awareness of it as a mental health issue.
Yeah, they want to move away.
And they want digital detox.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All of that.
Do you know what I think would be a big shift? Is if they managed to prove that you only had a certain amount of memory a day.
Well, I came up with the idea of psychograms, you know, because like we all understand that there's a kind of weight, a physical weight that we can't, even the toughest meathead guy knows there are some weights that he just physically couldn't lift. But then we all kind of pretend that we can carry any amount of emotional weight or psychological weight.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it was a psychogram of like 3,000, we'd say, oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, you've reached the limit.
Yeah.
Mate, that's quite good. It's good even fictionally. And it could maybe become...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like just to get
like
people
if you have
thinking
an interaction and it goes...
But how would you measure it? That's the question. Because we know so little, really, about the science of the brain.
I do think it's interesting.
Because that's what I mean about like social media. I love social media. And if social media had been around 20 years ago, it would have helped me in some ways because I'd have realised I wasn't the only person with a mental health problem or any of that. And you could find people
who
have that echo. But like anything, it's about understanding balance, moderation, being mindful. I think it's like ice cream. You don't want to tell people not to eat ice cream, but they'd understand if they just ate Ben and Jerry's for 6 hours on a Saturday and were just sitting there doing nothing, it would have, however fun it was at first, it would have a health consequence in the end.
Future self, innit?
Whereas we don't understand it as a mental health thing when we're just sort of scrolling on the toilet and just like, ugh.
Yeah, it's mystery. I really want to have a little bit of mystery back. Okay, so I have two questions that I want to ask you that seem ridiculous, maybe. Go to me, it. Mainly. Because they're vague and it sounds like I might be chatting you up.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Maybe I am. What is your favourite shape?
My favourite shape?
And you know what? Like, I want to open this up a little bit as well. Maybe it doesn't have to be like kind of GCSE level maths or anything. It can be.
So are we talking obscure. Like pentagons?
It could be like the White House. That's my favourite shape, motherfucker.
Are you meaning like a shape? Like a geometric shape? I mean,
people have said triangles, square, whatever, but like I've suddenly thought, wouldn't it be funny if you went cupboards?
I think circle.
Yeah. Wicked. We win again.
Because it is the shape, roughly, of our planet where we live.
Everything.
And everything is a circle.
It's everything. Cycle of life, beginning and the end.
Yeah, Lion King.
Okay. I'm whole. That's the thing. That's the whole brand. So thank you for answering that. I'll give you the money later. All right, what's your favourite colour?
Oh, colour.
At the moment.
I used to always say purple, but that was just because of Prince.
I just thought that. Did you just send me that telepathically?
Well, I was definitely thinking it at quite an intense level, so it might have leaked out into the atmosphere. Yeah, I don't know about purple, though. Purple can be a bit weird.
Well, it depends which level of purple.
I like
purple or like lavender. Or
yeah, lavender.
Lilac.
I like... you know, in everyday life, like if you're in a city, like for instance, I was recently in Edinburgh, and Edinburgh's quite a grey city, beautiful city, but it's very grey. And then you can sometimes just look down a side street and you see the green of nature.
Mm.
So I think green is very calming, isn't it? Green and blue.
It's positive.
Mm,
green. Grounding.
Mm.
Yeah, green's a great one. Yeah, green and blue. Well, turquoise is actually my favourite.
Indigo is my favourite word for a colour. It just sounds nice. Indigo.
It does sound great. Is it blue or purple, though?
It's indigo. It is itself.
I heard something on a podcast once about the man who found mauve.
What? The man?
Like, he found the colour mauve.
Wow.
And then it was bought by the royal family? I just made that up. Is it the royal colour, mauve? No? Whatever. All right, well, I thought, what I'm understanding is mauve is the royal colour. But he accidentally
I can't even picture mauve now. Like, well, how is mauve different to lavender and purple? But yeah, anyway, yeah.
But then
it's hard
thinking,
to describe colours.
But imagine if they found a new colour. So music, another one of our incentives to do with the I Am Whole is we are integrating the campaign with music. We're doing a gig called Music for Mental Health.
Yes.
Which you're welcome to come to, by the
way.
Oh,
lovely, amazing.
Got a great lineup. Won't go into it now. That's great. We think it's in a really important part of it. You've actually already said in the whole hour that you would probably play or listen to music. Has there been any moments in your life where it has quite literally saved you, or you've used it, utilised it to celebrate, or your greatest memory, other than Deep House at Pasha?
Well, it's weird. For a while, like, I couldn't listen to electronic fast music because of Ibiza. So it would literally, it would give me like a Vietnam flashback. My Ibiza flashback would be listening to, like, you know, if someone had accidentally switched Pete Tong on the radio or something, I'd be just sort of like, so I had to, so I got into like really sort of gentle acoustic sort of stuff, like, I don't know, Neil Young or something, or Classic FM. I'd just sort of like switch it on.
Hey, that's so cool.
And just sort of
not Mozart though, it's quite epic.
yeah, it can be, but yeah, like Radio 3 is like really unsettling classical music. Classic FM is sort of like
more chill,
but sort of slightly cheesier end of a classical music spectrum. I love music. I mean, one of the weird things, when I had my social media detox for a month, which was quite a while ago, I need another one, but I had a month off social media, and I was still using the internet, but you're using it in different ways, so you're finding out new music. I kind of discovered that I kind of like country music. I don't mind country music. I like sort of cooler genres as well. But I got into, and not even like the cool country music like Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash, but like really quite cheesy country music. And I don't know why.
Like Taylor Swift's original music.
Yeah, but you know, the sort of stuff that wouldn't even make it over here because it's just so, inverted commas, bad. But
I got a friend. You got a friend. We all hang out at the bar. Yeah.
Oh, not that level. But some really cheesy ones that are slightly like Hallmark cards as songs about life and such. So like, there's one called Don't Blink about how you just got to take every moment of your life. I don't like the ones about beer
and
shit.
There is quite a nice... I don't like the ones about beer. He had a beer. I had a beer. We all drank beer. It was really fun.
And then we joined the army.
No, but they do. I bet country artists do seem to have this kind of very outward idea about like the blissful elements of life.
Yeah, but no, it's like because sometimes I think when you get older, you get slightly bored of songs just about making eye contact in a nightclub.
Really, you get bored of that?
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally, yeah. Does get a bit boring. But yeah. No, I like all kinds of music, like Californian, that sort of harmonious Californian sound, Joni Mitchell and things like that, mellow stuff. And yeah, all kinds of things. Al Green, like a bit of Al Green.
He's still alive, isn't he? Yeah. I miss that as a very lovely era back then. There was 70s. some very kind of like the strong, heartfelt metaphor and like
songs with a capital S.
Oh, and they're just like loving each other and, you know, like, let's stay together.
Amazing.
Oh, just so simple, but like, I'm so in love. Like, it's just, all right, Al, tell me again. Anyway, I don't feel there's any Al Greens at the moment. There might be a few Al Greens, but we just don't get to see him so much for some reason.
No, like, I think Frank Ocean had the sort of...
Frank Ocean is a good shout. That's a fantastic shout. I can't lie to you.
Swim Deep
about...
was a song. Frank Ocean by Swim Deep.
Oh, my God.
I listened to Swim Good. Swim Good.
I'm a vanacon to the ocean.
That one.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. He's one of the greatest writers of the last 20 years, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 20. I'm going to say it.
Yeah. What? But it feels rarer to discover new exciting things, but not just in music, in life. So that's the challenge of getting old, Jordan. Not that you know this yet, but you need to sort of like really keep looking for that fresh stuff.
Matt Haig, thank you very much, man. Keep looking for that fresh stuff. That was the Whole Truth podcast. Hey, kids, keep looking for the fresh stuff and also check out modern contemporary country music. Peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Powered by Spirit Studios.